Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Sea Change Podcast. I am your host, Jenna Valente, and this is your go-to show to meet the most interesting and inspiring people living, working, and recreating along the American shorelines. Welcome to November, everybody. My hope for all of us this month is that we can all be very intentional about taking care of our mental health and a holistic well-being, because there is a lot of heavy stuff happening at the moment. And times like these can feel very overstimulating, hard to process, sometimes isolating and draining. So I want to start off this episode by emphasizing that you are not alone, even if it can feel that way sometimes. And if nothing else, I am here for you, whether we have met or not. If you need somebody to talk to, I am here. And yes, the point of this show is to highlight and celebrate all of the people who are doing great things in the world, people who are bright lights, leaders, and positive influences. But that doesn't come with turning a blind eye to the whole picture and the reality that we live in. And as we move forward, the work that we are doing as advocates is only going to get more necessary and increasingly important. And I know, especially when I think about how I operate, that slowing down does not come easy for many of us because we are so passionate about the work we do. But let's consider how effective we truly are when we are hobbling along or running on fumes. Our work matters. We are changing the world. But I also know that this work is not easy, and it takes its toll sometimes. And that is where the power of community comes in. Trusting that if you have to take a moment to breathe, that there are people around you that will have your back while you lean into rest in order to show up fully again. I have the distinct honor of working with such communities through the Healthy Ocean Coalition and the American Shoreline Podcast Network, both of which led me to cross paths with my guest today. Just over a year ago in August, we released a mini-series titled Voices of a Healthy Ocean, which is an audio road trip that listeners took with me and my colleague Sarah Winter Whelan down the Eastern Seaboard to meet with a handful of leaders in the Healthy Ocean Coalition community. But what you might not know is that a much larger audio-visual story map platform came out of that mini-series, and it is a project that I am incredibly proud of. But we will talk about that more in a bit after I stop rambling on and introduce my guest today, because she was central to the development of the Voices of a Healthy Ocean project. She is someone that I admire and I am excited for you all to get to know today. Isabella Briseño Alalfi, welcome to the show and thank you for joining me.
Thanks for having me, Jenna. It's an absolute pleasure.
So before we get into our work together on Voices of a Healthy Ocean, I would love for listeners to get to know you a little bit better. Will you share a little bit of your background with us?
Yeah, I don't know where to start, but I think I most recently define myself as a college student and now a college grad. I graduated in May from Penn State and have since been trying to figure out what the next steps are. But you know, I'm a wife. I'm a sister, a daughter. I really pride myself on having a wonderful support system of family and friends, and that's really who I consider myself and my background to be.
Big congratulations also on your graduation and your wedding recently. I feel like this has been such a big, lovely year for you.
Definitely. A lot of changes, but you know, a lot of wonderful changes that I feel very blessed about. So that's me on a personal sense, definitely.
Yeah. And do you have any favorite ways to connect with nature?
You know, I always connect with nature whenever I can, but it takes different forms. In childhood, I'm blessed to live where I have access to nature right in my backyard. So ever since I was a little girl, I would go outside, climb a tree with a book, and just read up there sitting in a tree. And now it's taken different forms. And as I've gotten older and tried to work through, you know, myself, we all go through times where we try to go and work through our lives and what's troubling us. Now I like to sit outside, and I could sit outside for hours just meditating and feeling the sun on my face and letting my mind go blank. And, you know, there's a term that I came across called Kamo Rebi, which is a Japanese term. There's no translation in English, but really what it means is sunlight leaking through trees. And that just for some reason really speaks to my soul. And every time I can go outside and just experience Kamo Rebi, I feel very connected to nature.
I feel that so deeply. It was like, I was like closing my eyes, listening to you. I also was like laughing internally because I love that you climb trees and you're reading up there as a kid, because I would do a similar thing, but I would climb trees and then I would like make bird sounds at the people walking by. And I totally thought that I was like getting away with it, but like really, I've like certain I was just like the weird neighborhood kid.
There she is in the tree again, making birds.
People are like avoiding my house. You know, it's funny because it still kind of translates today. Like I'll go outside and go for like long walks, and I'll try to like imitate all the bird calls through whistling. So, that's, you know, amazing. I'm staying true to myself, but I also feel like there's so much healing in just going outside and like tapping into that sensory experience that you were describing of just observing what's around you and like hitting pause on any of the like thoughts of what's to come or what you have to do. And there's another Japanese phrase called Shinrin Yoku, which is forest bathing, which sounds like very similar to what you're describing, where there's like actual scientific evidence for like the mental and physical health benefits that you can get from just spending time in the woods and in the forest, because trees release different like pheromones and chemicals that we then inhale and absorb, and they're like proven to release stress.
So true. And, you know, it's so present in so many civilizations and in past and present times that you don't even need science to know that being out in nature makes you feel good. And yet I think we've gotten away from that. There's days that I stay inside all day and I feel the effects of it, whether I'm conscious of it or not. So I love that you open up this conversation asking that question and we get to talk about it, because I think it's not talked about enough. And you look at kids growing up nowadays, and what do they do all day? They're watching TV or they're on a screen or an iPad, and it just makes me sad to see that that's the trend, but doesn't mean that we can't go back to being immersed in nature again when we choose to.
Totally. It's always there. And you're exactly right. It's like those days that, you know, it's hard for me to like get out of bed, or maybe I don't want to go outside and I'm feeling a little bit lazy. If I can just push past that and get out there and go for a walk or spend a little bit of time outdoors, I never regret it. So I feel like this is like a big call for listeners, is maybe your charge for the day is to just go outside for even like 5 minutes and take some deep breaths and check in with yourself.
Yeah. And hey, feel free to pause it and go outside and listen to the rest of this outside.
Do it right now. Yeah. Go now. Are there any places that are particularly special to you? I love to ask this question because I feel like there are pieces of nature that, I mean, they almost are like personified for me. Like there are places that it's like going to see an old friend when I go visit, or you like notice when they change a little bit, or maybe they're like not as healthy as they used to be. Like, are there places like that for you that you have sort of over time developed a like deep connection with?
Definitely. I feel that way. And it's funny again about my backyard. I spent so much time there that it's changed throughout the years even. So to be so close to my own home and see that change is pretty stark. But you know, now that I live in New Jersey. I should preface this, and so I'm used to oak and maple trees and the seasons and those wonderful just experiences of the East Coast. And then for college, I moved to Pennsylvania, which is like New Jersey, but with mountains. And so many of my college memories have been tied to the landscape, which for such a formational time, I think, in my life, that's pretty wonderful. I will always remember how my friends and I would stargaze at a local dog park of all places. We would go for sunset hikes all the time at a place called Joe Hayes with a beautiful view of all of Penn State. We would go running down mountains at this place called Musser Gap. So it's special to me because the people I love were enjoying it with me, like friends and family. So it was the best of both worlds. I had, the people I loved and getting to be in nature. And now that I'm back in New Jersey and, looking around, I live in a very agricultural town. There is farm fields all around, but those, even as they are developed from forest lands, are being developed further through a lot of introduction of warehouses. So we have Amazon warehouses that just went up miles away from me. There's talk of even more. So it's a stark change to the landscape, and one that I'd never thought growing up would reach us because we live in no man's land, and yet it's here.
It is shocking when you see the size of those Amazon warehouses.
They're absolutely
massive. I always try to think about that when I'm, when there's like a really good deal on Amazon, I like flash through my mind, like just like the size of these warehouses. But I definitely connect with that too. I grew up in Maine, and, Southern Maine, where I'm from, is like a little more developed, but it's definitely like over time, I'm starting to notice like just rapid development of this place that is sort of known for how much wilderness it has to offer. And it's sort of something we're like grappling with here is understanding like population is growing and people need places to live, but wanting to make sure that that's done in like a very responsible way, which doesn't necessarily feel like it is. It sort of just seems like people are putting things up left and right, which is stressful. Absolutely. Very stressful. And I think partly why we do this work to some extent.
Yeah. I mean, I have thoughts on this for just in general in so many different areas, but it just feels like it's humans versus nature. And our viewpoint, whether we talk about it or not, is a very dominating approach to interacting with nature. We're superior is what the status quo really is. So when you look around and you see development, it's become the status quo, but you go back centuries ago and it's just almost alien. It's weird to think that we're creating this separate world on top of what has been existing for millions of years. So it's very, very interesting to think about.
It really is. It's like one of the only, if maybe the only animal that is like actively destroying our own habitat. Yeah. This is so bizarre. So I know like a lot of the work that we do together is through the Healthy Ocean Coalition and sort of centered around ocean advocacy or like a very ocean-centered focus. So I'm curious. I know Pennsylvania is landlocked, but New Jersey has a beautiful coastline. Is there something that you love most about the ocean or a way that you connect with the ocean? I'd love to hear your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I grew up going to the ocean. It's about an hour from my childhood house in New Jersey. So we would go all the time in the summer, especially, and just enjoy it. We go in the water and dive under the waves. But I think as I've grown up and studied the ocean more, my love for it has transcended to appreciate how vast it is. I mean, something like 5%, I should look up the statistics. Last I saw, 5% of the ocean has been explored. We have what can seem like a completely different planet just miles away underneath the surface. And I love it because it reminds us how small humans really are. And just like we were talking about, we don't have to look around to see development on land. But the ocean, even though it's definitely impacted, no doubt, by human activities directly and indirectly, it's a fear of so many humans. I mean, most people are hardly willing to go into the water while they're at the beach because they think of sharks or other dangers. So the ocean still belongs to its creatures. And we don't see that often at all on land nowadays. There's a book called Ishmael that's my favorite book, and it's written from the perspective of a man talking to a gorilla, which is such a funny concept at first, but it's written because the entire novel takes you through an unraveling of how humans perceive the world around them. And a world that's, dominating and we're the superior species. And it runs counter to anything the Earth has ever seen or promotes. And I think the ocean is like the last frontier in the sense of where humans are meant to be out of place. No matter how much we fantasize about Atlantis or mer people, ridiculous things like that, it's so beyond us, and it's such a force of nature that I'm not only just in love with it, but you have to be in awe of it, really.
It's so awe-inspiring. And like, talk about just if you ever want to be humbled, right? Like, go visit the ocean, whether it's like you just like wade in and get like flattened by a wave or like you like, I feel like probably not everybody can relate to this, but I'm guessing because this is such an ocean-centered podcast that a lot of people listening can, but like that moment when you find yourself in like really deep water, the thoughts that go through your head are like, I'm clearly not the apex anymore. And it's very clear that anything could come along here. And I'm just this like floundering giant like lug of a being.
Yeah. And you know that there are so many sea creatures that can sense you and sense that fear. And you're so right. It's so humbling. And
yeah, it like makes it worse because you're like, stop panicking. They know.
Yep. Can't even take deep breaths because you're not in your element.
Yeah. I can't even do my like anxiety breathing. But seriously, we do love the ocean. Yes. It is just a very humbling place.
Totally.
Through the work that we've done together, and like we'll talk about voices in depth in a little bit, but I know that we like pose this question to people that visit the Voices of a Healthy Ocean platform, which is, what does a healthy ocean mean to you? So I kind of wanted to pitch that question to you. I think it's a really fascinating thing to ask because it means so many different things to different people.
Yeah. And I love this question in particular because, again, as we'll get to later on, listening to the Voices podcasts and the different answers to this question, I'm not going to allow them to influence me. I just really appreciate it because you're so right. It does mean so many different things, but at the same time, a healthy ocean means the future and survival of all species. So we can all get behind that. But how we get there is way more complex because it's completely a radical system change for, again, how we interact with nature. I keep coming back to that. I'm sorry, but I really do see it as needing a shift in our collective mentality that the earth is meant to be subjugated, because it means we can reel the earth back from the climate change we've caused. It means we have to scale back globalization and consumerism to prevent overfishing and pollution and contamination, and just completely change our relationship with water use, ocean use, anything from nature. And once we change that mentality, I think that's when we can actually take the steps to really help the ocean bounce back. We've done pretty serious damage so far, and it's just going to continue getting to the point of no return because of how nature works. But I think that mentality starts with individuals and efforts like this, asking that question even, so that people are thinking about it. So that's a long-winded answer, but it really should mean everything to us, because we know the earth is so interconnected with systems that the minute we forego the ocean, we're foregoing every other environment on this planet.
Right. Yeah. And I know that that is a huge influence for me to do this work even at all, is this like hyper fixation that I've had ever since I can remember, that like, it just feels so clear to me that like, if we don't take care of our planet, then nothing else matters. Like if we don't have an environment to live in, a place that people can be healthy and thriving and have like not contaminated food and air and water, like I don't know, I'm just like nothing else matters. Like all of our human constructs and things that we like think matter. If like, you know, I just feel like it's such a gift that we have this planet that just happens to be this like perfect habitat for us to live. If you zoom out and look at like the vast universe, like what are the odds that we ended up here? Right. And like, how can we do anything else but take care of it? That's just kind of like where my mind goes with that. And I'm wondering, like, is that kind of like a big influence for you? Or like, what is it that influenced you to pursue a career and your studies in like the climate and ocean conservation space?
It's really funny you ask that, because it's a one-word answer: sharks. And I'll expand on that. There was a oceanography class that I took my freshman year of high school, and before that, my mom was the type that bought organic produce and composted and used reusable bags before it was the law. And so I've always had that influence, but I became really passionate about the ocean because of a documentary we watched. It was called Shark Water, by a man who's now deceased, Rob Stewart. And it just showed me how blind I think a lot of society is to how we interact with the ocean, because it's so out of touch. Again, going back to humans being scared of sharks and scared of the ocean, that fear drives a lot of ignorance, I think. So when there are hordes of fisher people on the high seas that are seriously depleting apex predators like sharks and other keystone species that is going to unravel the ecosystem, it's really just, once you learn that kind of thing, you can't not unlearn it. And I think it just changed my perspective. And from then on, I won't say I became a shark girl because it's not like I wore like, you know,
I was like a horse girl.
Yeah, exactly. I should have. That would have been so cool. But I was just, you know, the type that talked about it. And anytime you hear someone who's like, oh, sharks are going to eat me, I would be that person to be like, well, did you know? And hit them with the truth that, you know, there's like 100 million sharks that die by humans, and humans, it's about 7 or 10 that die each year from sharks. I mean, it is just incredibly imbalanced. So
the scales are like way off balance. And so one, my family rolls their eyes at me so hard because my version of that when they talk about being afraid of sharks is I'm always like, you know what? Chances are you're probably not going to get attacked by a shark. And then if you do, they don't mean it. You know what I mean? Like, like it's an accident because you're not even worth it for them. You don't have the right muscle to fat ratio. They're not actually trying to eat you. It's just an accident.
Nope. You're not even important to them. How does
you're
that
not.
Make
you? Like, they don't even want you.
Humbling, really. Well, and talk about being in the ocean and feeling fear. They sense that. They could easily come to you. I mean, they have the body parts of the biology to sense electric signals. I mean, you could be just completely outmatched if they cared, but they don't. So it's okay. You know?
Yeah, it's okay. Hopefully if people are afraid of sharks out there, we haven't made it worse. At least you know now that they don't actually want to eat you, but you know, sometimes they don't make mistakes just like people. I'm curious to hear more about your time at Penn State and specifically the programs that you participated in. So will you share a little bit more about the environmental resource management and political science programs that you studied?
Yeah, absolutely. Going to college was a little bit of a – my path changed a lot. I ended up, quote, unquote, settling for Penn State, which I know will anger a lot of people. But I really wanted to study marine science, and there is no degree program for that. There's a minor, but you can't major in that. So there were other schools that I was looking at that had – robust marine science programs, but I came to Penn State just because, you know, the tuition benefits, you can't argue with that. My mom's a professor in the Penn State Commonwealth, so basically had to go, but I loved it in the end, and it was so worth it. I ended up choosing environmental resource management because I wanted that larger picture of not only environmental issues, but the economic and social intersections of that, which is sustainability. I didn't recognize that at the time, but I really wanted to learn more about how it all worked together. And then political science was tacked on my sophomore and junior year to help with the governance and policy side making of sustainability. Because I thought I wanted to go to DC for the longest time and really work someplace like the EPA or even House of Representatives. And even though I don't anymore, I appreciate that academic background of the two because I had the science and the math from ERM and then a lot of the history and the social aspects from political science. So together, again, it culminated to sustainability, which is what I worked a lot in for internships and continued to work in for my career.
I'm like, dear Lord, the house could really use somebody like you right now.
Oh, I can't. I don't want to go into that.
We don't even need to touch that right now. but now that you're graduated, is there like a specific direction that you're interested in going in or issues or topics that you're maybe like seeking out to get experience with or working on?
Yeah, I definitely want to work at the local level, which is it was a pivot from the DC national work I was initially thinking. And I think that pivot was something that came about probably by seeing a lot of what's going on in Capitol Hill and feeling disappointed about it. Of course, you learn about red tape and that things are never as easy as they might seem to you. So I wanted to work at a local level for that direct impact, specifically in going back to ocean conservation. So working a lot with coastal communities, as well as Latino community empowerment and immigrant accessibility. And it's not what I studied, but my education and my personal experiences being a Latina have really culminated in that kind of idea of where to go. And it amasses to sustainable development, like a lot of things nowadays. So I hope it comes across as sincere that what I really want to do and the direction I want to go in is making an impact. But I'm trying to do that and figure out how to support myself at the same time, which is a hard thing to do nowadays. Again, I think a lot of the big jobs that are in the environmental field, while it's really encouraging for early career professionals who are entering the job market, a lot of them, especially starting out, are menial, and they're in fields like renewable energy. And while that's wonderful, it isn't, I think, making the impact as quickly as we need it to. I don't think it utilizes youth and our passion for really making radical change in a way that is productive. And that's nobody's fault. I just think it's a little bit of a disparity with our goals that we want to reach by 2030 and our day-to-day, year-to-year reality.
Oh, 100%. You're spot on. And I mean, like, doing this work, like, a lot of people talk about it too, with like, it shouldn't have to be this like passion project that like people aren't necessarily compensated fairly for. Like, oh, you want to work in the environmental field, then, you know, you're just not going to make any money for the rest of your life. But like, I feel that, like, to full disclosure for listeners, like, I live with my parents right now because everything's so expensive. So I'm like very fortunate that I have somebody that's available to help me and like give me some space to try to like build up my savings. But like, that is a choice a lot of people have to make, is like, well, I really care about the environment and I want to do this work, but also I need to make a living. I have a family, I have this, I have that, and I need to pay the bills. And, you know, maybe don't have the option to move back in with mom and dad or whatever, don't want to. And, you know, I think that those are, it's nice to be transparent about what working in this space means sometimes. Like, you know, like, of course I'd love to have my own home and I will someday, but that's kind of a hit that I took from, you know, going off on my adventures, living in cities and kind of scraping by in my 20s, just trying to like make it work. And then, you know, you have like your student loan debt and all of this stuff kind of adds up over time. And it's like, okay, like living in the world right now is very expensive, especially if you're like not working in corporate America.
Yep, it's impossible. And it's, again, a system. A lot of it to do with capitalism. And we look at how capitalism really is directly connected to environmental degradation in a lot of ways. And also keeping people in low income to middle income while the high income earners run further and further away from us. And I think a lot of what we're doing on an individual level is wonderful and we're passionate, but it puts so much onus on us to make the difference when it's really, you know, the CEOs and politicians who have the decision-making power and aren't doing anything. And not doing anything. That's a little too extreme, but it feels like
you could
that.
Say that. I mean, I feel that way because it's like, why would they? The world that they have created and continue to uphold is serving them and allowing them to live with this like extreme wealth that they've amassed. And I mean, if that's the position that they're in, I don't see any of them feeling extra generous in a way that's like, well, I'm going to give this up so that everybody else can live a better life, even though that's exactly what they should be doing.
Yes. And it all goes back to the not having connection with nature, not having connection with other people. It's easy to be isolated nowadays and to focus on your bubble. And CEOs and politicians aren't immune to that. And when you just get into the monotonous turning of that wheel day in and day out, it doesn't allow you a chance to look up and see the world. And you have to be willing to look up and see the world and go outside and meditate and visit with people who have different lifestyles than you. And it's, I think, just a chronic problem across the world, not just America, but we definitely feel it in America for various reasons.
Totally. It's like the isolating effects of capitalism, essentially, is it's just me, me, me. I don't need help from anybody else. It's just all about me and my accomplishments and how much I can make. And I don't care about you because I'm better than you, basically. That's how I feel anyway. I know we can have like a total, like probably hour long conversation about our thoughts about the system that we live in, but I want to make sure we have time to talk about the great work that you're doing. And I know that you work with Hispanic Access Foundation. They are a group that like we know and love through Healthy Ocean Coalition. Hispanic Access Foundation has been featured on this show several times through our collaborative episodes with David Riera and also Shauna Edberg's feature on Voices of a Healthy Ocean. But will you refresh listeners just about like what does Hispanic Access Foundation do and what is your involvement with the organization?
So my sophomore year of college, I quote unquote met Shauna at a virtual conference I was presenting at. And it was an ocean themed presentation and a session, I believe. And one thing led to the other. And they offered for me to become a part of their Ocean Advisory Council as the undergraduate representative. And really what this council is, it's now called Olas y Acción, which is Waves and Action. It's a council for Hispanic Access Foundation to work in the intersection of ocean protection and Latino community engagement. So there are a lot of flagship programs and annual events that Hispanic Access Foundation hosts. Our council will lead an ocean-themed, whether a session or event or something of that sort. We'll do toolkits to help Latino communities understand topics like ocean protections and how to obtain them for their community. We do policy advocacy through things like supporting Chumash Heritage Sanctuary, going to DC and talking with representatives. And it's been a really wonderful role to be a part of for the better part of, I guess, 3 years. Because they really take care of their folks. And I was no exception. You know, as a 20-year-old on a council with people far more experienced and knowledgeable and ingrained in their communities, I really became a sponge and soaked in all the information I could. And in turn, they've always supported me and factored in my voice, even as an undergraduate student, and gave me opportunities to lead sessions at Capitol Hill Ocean Week and help with council strategic planning. So I just have a lot of respect for Hispanic Access Foundation and their mission. And they really are a wonderful example of how youth can be brought into the fold and meant to feel important. So that's a little bit of a sappy way to say what we do. They're really wonderful people.
Yeah, I can second that. I absolutely love Hispanic Access Foundation. Any opportunity we get to collaborate with them, I am so excited about, because like you just said, they're just really great to work with. They're just like true partners in every sense of the word. And you can tell that like their work is just so heart-centered, and they genuinely care about the communities that they work with and their employees and volunteers. If somebody's listening to this and wants to like maybe learn more about Hispanic Access Foundation or support their work, how might they go about finding them?
I would suggest looking at their socials to start and their website, because they really do a good job of showing and promoting the annual events that they'll hold and that people all around the nation can be a part of. Examples like Latino Conservation Week, where communities, again, around the country can get together for a hike or another activity outdoors and receive funding and other support from Hispanic Access Foundation to make it possible. They also have events like Latino Advocacy Week, which is centered around speaking to your representatives and how to advocate for your community. They have Our Heritage, Our Planet Film Week, which is really a virtual festival of so many different pieces of work that you can either attend or submit to. So they really have a good plethora of opportunities to get involved with. And I think visiting their website is a great place to start.
So let's actually talk about how we met. this is another moment to give a shout out to David Riera, because he's the best.
Yes.
We love working with him. But, you know, because when we were in the early planning stages of the Voices of a Healthy Ocean project, he was like, I have the perfect person to bring on to develop the story maps for this. And, you know, actually, maybe we should back up for a moment and finally explain Voices of a Healthy Ocean. So, as I mentioned at the top of the show, it's an audiovisual storytelling project which features some of the community leaders within the Healthy Ocean Coalition family. And the people featured in the pilot project, like this iteration of it, they're all based along the Eastern Seaboard. And the goal is to continue building it out over time to highlight everyone that wants to participate that is in the Healthy Ocean Coalition community. Because this project was really born from the knowing that like the best part of the Healthy Ocean Coalition are the people that make up the community. It truly is this like giant group of grassroots advocates all working together to like grow and inform each other and support each other. And we work with some truly remarkable people, and we wanted to offer a way for people to get to know them in a much more meaningful way than just listing logos on our website. Plus, like, we have a lot of individuals that aren't affiliated with an organization, so like that piece of it also felt kind of exclusive if we were just going to only list logos on our website about who we work with. So this allows people to like go and you can explore videos, podcasts, texts, photos, on a story map and meet our members. It's something like, I feel like I already said this earlier, but I'm like incredibly proud of this project. And I'm just wondering, Bella, like if you think that's an accurate description, if there's anything you'd like to add or share your experience as part of the Voices team.
I think that's a great description, because it really is about inviting people to join the platform and to really bring to life the stories of the Voices of a Healthy Ocean people. I mean, we have the podcasts people can listen to. We have videos that the wonderful Matt Cardona put together. And we had the story maps. And just to kind of explain maybe story maps a little bit more for people who are unaware, it's a way for basically a website to be intertwined with lots of different media, from pictures to videos to audio, in a really immersive and interactable way. It's not just a static page, but instead a really dynamic, breathing space, which is perfect for a project like this, because we want to show these people in all of their wonderful angles and facets. And I hope, you know, that people, maybe after this, but just in general, will explore it and feel like they know these people and the incredible work that they're doing.
Yeah. And I should mention now before I forget that if you want to check out Voices of a Healthy Ocean, probably the easiest way for you to do that now is just to go to healthyoceancoalition.com, and then you can access it straight from our website. And like, definitely go check it out, because it's super cool. It's really interactive. It's sort of designed for like anything that catches your attention, like however you like to consume information, there's something there for you. And Bella, I feel like, you know, ArcGIS and story maps, I feel like there's really an art to it. Like, I feel like you're an artist for the work that you have done. It's so beautiful. You know, if someone is listening to this and is interested in learning ArcGIS or exploring story maps, like, what would you like for them to know? Do you have any advice or like insights that you'd like to share?
I would tell them to just start playing around in a sandbox, basically, because really it's a very user-friendly tool. It looks wonderful when you see the finished product, and it can feel like it's hard to design, but really, I mean, I started out just trying to figure it out, and I had so much fun creating literally a story map called Sandbox and throwing a bunch of media into it, even if it was clunky at first, and just practicing, because over time you learn how to use the platform and get a better eye for how to put all the pieces together. It really becomes a puzzle for how to write captivating dialogue, but complement it with pictures and videos and audio. And I'm not trained in this professionally. I would say use a tutorial if I actually used one. So I really encourage people to explore it and see how it can fit for whatever project or event or whatever they're interested in using it for.
And, you know, so much of the work we do through the Healthy Ocean Coalition and Hispanic Access Foundation, plus the Story Map Project that we were working on together, it's centered around community. I'm just curious to get your thoughts on, like, what is the power of community? What does that mean to you?
I think it's the coolest thing that humans and other animal species do. I think it's a beautiful thing that we are just naturally inclined to be with other people, whether that's relationships, neighborhoods, professional communities, collective action, and advocacy. We really are just stronger with more people. And I think that and resilience are our true superpowers. So the power to community, for me, it really boils down to love. I think, in a cheesy, hippie way, love is the underlying force for everything. And it really threads through community and is its source of power, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's beautiful. I mean, I'm the perfect audience for cheesy, like, heartwarming, hippie, love, lovey-dovey stuff. I can't get enough of it. And the science shows, like, one of the keys to a long life is that sense of belonging and togetherness, like feeling like you're part of a community. So I think that that's a great point to make in times that can really feel so isolating, is like, don't be afraid to get out there and, like, you know, say hi to somebody or like reach out to somebody that you think is interesting or you could learn from, because you never know if you'll have like a lifelong friend from that. Yeah. And so, Bella, I wrap up every episode with sort of like a lightning round where I ask the same set of questions to every guest. So we'll start with, what do you think is the most pressing environmental challenge that we're facing?
Again, I remember going through the podcast and hearing everyone's responses to this question, and I can only echo that I think everything that's going on environmentally is definitely pressing, definitely a challenge. But honestly, if I had to pinpoint one thing, and it's not even an environmental consequence, I think the challenge for us is apathy. And it's no longer, and I say that because we think, like, it used to be people were just ignorant to all of the environmental challenges happening and the disasters going on. But we're past that point. We have too much access to information and news to just be completely ignorant of things like climate change and ocean acidification. I think what we're at right now is the challenge of apathy, and people either not caring from the start or caring for decades and having that fade because of frustration. And I think that is what is the death of us all, is when we just stop caring completely. So I just would encourage people to not lose hope and to hold on to it.
And what are you energized about moving forward?
I am really excited for a variety of things. I'm excited to see what amazing groups, you know, that are youth-led, indigenous-focused, diverse, and inclusionary. I'm excited to see what those groups do moving forward, and I'm excited and hopeful to be a part of that. I really want to help people, and I'm energized about the possibilities of that and feeling community. And however that happens, I'm content and energized for that to be not only my future, but our future moving forward.
And you can approach your answer to this however you want, because it's like a two-parter. But what's the best advice you've ever been given, and or what advice do you have for our listeners?
So the advice I have, since I already kind of said it, would just be to hold on to hope. I really believe that it's the strongest tool in our arsenal. As for advice that I've been given, it's I grew up listening to a lot of classics with people like Thalia and Maná, and a phrase that's always stuck with me was "Echa pa'lante," which means onward, go ahead, move forward, and I've just kind of had that as a rallying phrase for a lot of different times, good and bad, that they're temporary and just got to keep moving.
Well, that is a beautiful message to wrap up a beautiful conversation. Bella, thank you so much for joining me today. I just like wholeheartedly enjoyed chatting with you. I mean, you know, I adore you. I'm so excited that we get to keep working together and creating more wonderful stories. And I'm just happy to have you on and happy to know you. So thank you for joining me today.
Thank you so much for having me, Jenna. This was awesome. And I respect you, and I'm excited to keep working together moving forward.
I'd also like to thank the listeners. If you like this episode and want to hear more like it, we are the American Shoreline Podcast Network. Wherever you get your podcasts, subscribes, rates, and reviews are very much welcome and appreciated. If you enjoy social media, you can find us online. We are at CoastalNews365 on Twitter and Instagram, and the American Shoreline Podcast Network on Facebook. And you can find me personally at Jenna Valente on Instagram. So please find us online and let's chat about our beautiful coastlines.